This episode of Beyond the Uniform is sponsored by Point Avenue. Based in Vietnam, Point Avenue is a private education technology company offering K-12 educational services and admissions consulting throughout Southeast Asia. We are grateful for the financial support of Point Avenue on this episode. It helps us further our mission at Beyond the Uniform and have a bigger impact on the military veteran community. Enjoy this episode. Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and my goal is to help military veterans succeed in their civilian career. Today's episode number 314, Serial Entrepreneur in Southeast Asia with Danny Huang.
When we immigrated to the States, to Atlanta, Georgia in 1990, I was 5 years old at the time. My brother was six. So even at a young age, at the age of five and six, my brother would constantly talk about the goals. So we had three goals for ourselves when we were kids. Number one was, let's make it out of Georgia. Nothing wrong with Georgia, but we wanted to do more and venture out. Number two is let's build our own success. So whatever success means to you, right? And it's not just a financial reward, but I think it's also important to be able to wake up every day and to see work, not as work, but to be very passionate about what you do and to see the impact that you're having. And then the third thing we said is let's retire our parents. And so we were able to eventually accomplish those three things. And it took us until 2014, I guess, right? But we're able to do that.
Well, you can sign me up for the Danny Huang Fan Club. We cover fresh terrain in this episode, which is impressive after doing 300 of these episodes, as we follow Danny's story of leaving the Army and just weeks later traveling to Shanghai and growing an education startup. Just 3 years after that, he and his brother successfully sell their first company together. In doing so, they achieved a lifelong goal that they committed to together at ages 5 and 6 of being able to retire their parents and move them from their home in Atlanta back to Seoul, Korea. Now Danny is at it again, this time in Vietnam, joined by co-founders who were once his classmates at West Point and friends in the Army. If you are interested in taking a risk in your career, if you're interested in setting goals and achieving them, or in maintaining a great family life in addition to a great work life, if you're interested in starting a company or just hearing a story from an inspirational veteran doing great things in the world, this episode is for you. If you enjoy this episode, I picked out two other similar episodes that I'll put in the show notes at beyondtheuniform.org. The first is episode number 114, where I interviewed Justin Cook about how he founded Empire Flippers while traveling in Southeast Asia and grew it into an Inc. 500 company. Also, episode 111 is about two sibling Army vets and their two successful startups. It's the story of John and Chris Boggiano. They both are West Point grads, both Army veterans, and they co-founded two companies together as brothers and grew them successfully together. Normally on the show, I'll start the episode with a bio. I wanted to make as much time for the interview as possible, so I'll give you Danny's bio here. Danny Huang is the founder and CEO of Point Avenue. Based in Vietnam, Point Avenue is a private education technology company offering K-12 educational services and admissions consulting across Southeast Asia. He also serves as a partner of NP Equity Partners, a private multi-asset alternative investment firm founded in 2016 with offices in Hong Kong, Seoul, and Los Angeles. He started out at West Point, after which he served as an Army Ranger for 6 years, including two tours in Iraq and over 25 months overseas. After his military service, he co-founded New Pathway Education and Technology Group with his older brother Sam in Shanghai, China, which was acquired in 2014 by CBC Capital Partners. He currently serves as the chairman of Ignite, a professional services company that specializes in human capital development, and CEO of Odyssey, a joint venture company developing AI, artificial intelligence technology. Danny's hobbies include traveling the world with his wife, Honda, racing in ultramarathons and Ironman competitions, reading and spending time with his family. So with that, let's dive in to my conversation with Danny. Joining me today in Seoul, Korea, my guest is Danny Huang. Danny, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Thank you.
And Danny, just to give listeners an appreciation here of your commitment, what time is it right now in Seoul?
It's 5:30 a.m.
Okay. See, that military training continues to pay off. And also just to kind of give, I'm sure we'll get into this, but to give listeners a sense of your life, in the last, let's just say arbitrarily 30 days, how many countries have you been in the last 30 days?
Last 30 days, I think I've been in probably about 4 to 5 different countries.
Okay. Well, we are glad to catch you in Korea while you're there. So maybe to start things off, Danny, walk us back to when you were in the military and as you left the Army, what was the transition like for you? And what was the, how did your first career search go for you?
Sure. So I entered into West Point, the United States Military Academy, in 2002. So right after 9/11, I spent 4 years there, and I had an incredible military career, had incredible mentors, worked for 3 different general officers, was part of the 25th Infantry Division out of Hawaii. And after 6 years of service, 2 combat tours in Iraq, I made the decision ultimately to transition out. Unfortunately, I just didn't have a lot of resources. I think I remember reading the book PCS to Corporate America, and that was about the extent of the support and help I received getting out. And then I moved to Shanghai, China to start an education technology company with my older brother, Sam. And everything was just ready, set, go from that point on.
That's awesome. Did you always know you wanted, I mean, you've had an impressive entrepreneurial track record. Is this something you always knew you ultimately wanted to do?
Not really, because when I got out of the West Point, I ended up going, you know, thinking to myself that I wanted to make a career out of it and you know, become a general officer. That was kind of a goal of mine. And then my brother, actually, he moved to Shanghai, China before I did, and he kept on emailing me and asking me to join him. So it was really an opportunity that my brother created. Never really thought about entrepreneurship, education technology before that. So it was a very new opportunity for me.
And was that, when you talked about the brother's opportunity, was that Next Pathways?
Yes, it's a New Pathways. New Pathways.
I read my notes wrong here. New Pathways. Okay. So we'll talk about kind of where this goes, but just to lay context, how would you explain to someone who's on active duty what is New Pathways? What was your mission there?
Sure. So in China, there's about 500,000 students every year who study abroad in America, and so these students attend international schools, bilingual schools. It would be called the K-12 market, kindergarten to 12th grade market, English language training, and test preparation. A lot of students are preparing for various exams, such as the SAT, ACT, and studying abroad, right? So our business was an O2O, online to offline. So this is an online platform, both web-based and mobile-based, and then also had offline education centers where students could come after school and also on the weekends to study with us.
Mm. And it sounds like your brother was kind of the starting point there, but take us through the genesis of how that went from this idea into this growing massively company.
Absolutely. So my brother, well, his background is he went to MIT and finished his master's and undergraduate. And he actually started an SAT online company while at MIT, but because he was a student and didn't have a track record and the network, the resources, when he went for fundraising, nobody was interested in his company. So essentially he ran out of money after about 6 months, had to close down his company. And with that experience, and they say failure is your best friend, he decided to venture out to China and start a new venture. And so that's kind of where the SAT comes from, right? The background and his experience. As for myself, I actually have no background in entrepreneurship, in finance, accounting. I studied sociology and environmental engineering, so probably the furthest thing from business when I was in university. So when I came out to China, I did not have a very defined role because we were operating a startup. We had a very lean team. We were trying to build a company. And when I first joined, I just found the opportunity, had to take a lot of initiative. The first opportunity I stepped into and the role was much more along the lines of HR, so human resources. I looked at how we could help build a strong company culture, looked at how we could incorporate key performance indicators, KPIs, performance reviews, so that individuals could be properly recognized and compensated for their contributions. And I focused on building up the culture within the company. And eventually I took over the role as the chief operating officer. So that was a transition point about 12 months, I think, from the day I landed. And it was a full-on sprint from the first day.
What was that like? I'm just trying to picture, you know, you have all these deployments in the Army, you're in this military culture, and then I'm guessing within days, weeks, or months, you are now in Shanghai, in a startup, out of a uniform. It's pretty much every lever you could change in your life, you changed simultaneously. And I'm wondering what that was like, and if you have any advice around that for listeners about, whether you would recommend that sort of path.
So I think I always try to learn from my experiences, right? So learn from others, learn from my experiences. And I think at the age of 17, when I reported for Beast Barracks for summer basic training at West Point, it was drinking from the fire hose. So I had no military background. My parents were not prior military. My father served in the Korean Army, which was mandatory service, but you know, he was not able to really help advise and mentor me about summer boot camp at West Point. So there were so many things that I just had to figure out, take a lot of initiative, had to ask a lot of questions. I had to be incredibly resilient, had to be adaptable. So those kind of things I started at a very young age. And even when I joined the military, I received my first platoon, reported to my unit. There were so many things that I just didn't know as a young officer, as a young lieutenant. Went to my first combat deployment. You know, you only hear about the types of things you have to do when you're leading troops on the battlefield. And then it was ready, set, go. Similarly, when I arrived in China, once again, I did not have a very strong background in entrepreneurship and education. But just given the initiative, given the adaptability, given the resilience, figuring things out, I was able to apply a lot of those similar skill sets from the military into the world of entrepreneurship. And I think it has served me quite well. So, you know, advice for listeners, for others would be, there are actually a lot of incredible skill sets that you can transfer in terms of leadership, in terms of management, in terms of character, from the military into the private sector.
That's great. And that was one thing that stood out to me. I hope listeners take encouragement from that, the transferable skills. One other thing that the light bulb went off for me when you were talking is, often when we talk about entrepreneurship on the show, guests talk about maybe going to business school, and there's pros and cons there. Some people talk about getting experience in a company and then joining a startup. But your story is interesting because it shows that through partnerships, you can also cover some of the gaps. You partnered with your brother who had a different skill set, and that allowed you to kind of make that direct transition. And that's something for listeners to consider, is that you can find a partner who has differing skill sets that will help you bridge that gap potentially sooner than if you took a, you know, educational route or industry route to get to entrepreneurship.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think when you're thinking about building teams, you want to identify people who have different skill sets, different strengths, whether it's on the sports field, whether it's within the military, or even in business and entrepreneurship. So I think I have learned so much from my brother in terms of his resilience and his commitment every single day, you know, out on the battlefield, if you will, in entrepreneurship in China. And it was a humbling experience, an opportunity for me to learn, to observe, and also to act. So I think for listeners, it's absolutely critical that you surround yourself with people who are better than you, who can challenge you, and also individuals who have skill sets that you do not bring to the table, and you can then even make your weaknesses into your strengths. Things that you may not know, eventually you want to become a master of.
For I know we'll talk a lot more about entrepreneurship, but for people who are already energized about that direction, your story definitely seems more common than others, where it's like you're learning by fire. You're kind of like drinking from this fire hose. I'm wondering, if you were to rewind the clock, is there a book you would recommend to your younger self, or a podcast or a website, or is there some sort of training you could have been doing on active duty? Or is it just fair to say, look, get in, get after it, and learn on the job?
So I think it's a combination of both. There's, you know, going back to the military, you learn about the FM7-8, you learn about a lot of different types of military doctrine. And then when you're actually leading troops out there, whether it's in training, out in the field, or it's out on a combat mission, some of that stuff goes out the window, right? So you have to make a lot of important decisions based on intuition. You have to also listen to your Joes, listen to your soldiers and your platoon sergeant and the leadership within your unit. And similarly, in entrepreneurship, you know, you could spend a lot of time, I think, learning in the classroom. So, you know, for those individuals who want to pursue a master's of business administration or MBA, right? I didn't have the opportunity, because it was an opportunity for me to either pursue an MBA or join my brother and get my MBA, what I call on the job training, at New Pathway University, right? So I just chose to do the latter, and it really served me well. So I think if individuals have the opportunity to learn, you can learn from others who have built successful companies. I spent a lot of time reading. You asked for specific book recommendations. You know, there are some great books written by Howard Schultz, Starbucks, from Jeff Bezos. Of course, one of my favorites is called The Shoe Dog, from Phil Knight, the founder of Nike. And it's a memoir, so it's less instructive, I guess. And it's just much more of a powerful story that he shares. But a few things. One is he's always looking at ways to solve his problems, his issues, looking forward about what he can do to move Nike as a company, move the needle forward. And then third is he focuses on the solidarity of his team, right? Mm-hmm. So ultimately, if it wasn't for the people within his organization who are shoe lovers, shoe dogs, that's what that means, he would have never been able to build a successful company. So I think the team aspect really resonated with me, always resonates with me. You can't build a successful company without good people.
Mm. Shoe Dog, I got to give my two cents on that. That is such a great, for people who run, it's such a good audiobook to listen to while running. I swear my paces were faster while listening to that book. It's such a motivational book. So walk us through, you're now a year in, your title is Chief Operations Officer.
So this is, yep, correct. That was back in China, right?
Yep. Yeah. So take us through the story of this first startup experience. Like, what do the next couple of years look like for the company, but also for your own development?
Yeah. So I think in terms of my own development, working with your, especially your older sibling, can also be a challenge, right? We're brothers always, but I think working together and having that professional relationship was something I had to figure out. His style of leadership was much more of, if you don't know this, then figure it out, right? Rather than really spending the time to mentor, because we're operating a startup, just didn't have a lot of time to sit down and go through the details. And so in terms of on-the-job training, it was me just figuring things out, right? So learning how to build a P&L, learning how to think about marketing strategies, learning how to expand and scale the business from a purely offline center into what I call the O2O, the online to offline blended learning model. So many things that I just relied on from, once again, online resources. YouTube was a great resource. Just looking at how to build different business plans and whatnot, and also reaching out to mentors, reaching out to friends. Individuals who pursued a civilian sector outside of entrepreneurship in Asia, just reaching out to them, bouncing some ideas off, and ultimately just figure things out, right? It's a lot of problem solving. It's a lot of learning. It's a very humbling experience, but you know, you can just learn so much every day, right? So even now, I've been out of the Army since 2000, 2006, right? So 2006, I graduated. So 2012, right? Transitioned out. So it's been a minute, right? So I've been out of the military and ever, you know, since I joined the military, ever since I got out of the military, it's always constantly opening up my mind to learn new things, figuring out how I can be more innovative, be more creative, and also contribute to the team, to the companies that I'm a part of.
And in 2014, your first company gets acquired. What was the size of the organization at that point in terms of, I don't know, headcount or locations?
So we had three offices in Shanghai. We had two offices in Beijing, and we also had a recruitment center out in Boston, Massachusetts. We had about 125 full-time employees.
Man.
So that was about the size of our company. We started this company. So my brother actually started this company in 2009. And then I joined in early 2012. So within exactly 5 years, we're very fortunate to sell our company to a private equity firm called CVC Capital and then exit thereafter.
Did you have time to catch your breath and celebrate, or was it straight from that into the next thing?
I think it's always important to take pause, to reflect, once again, to learn from the past. And also to spend some time with family, with friends. So my brother and I absolutely had a little bit of time, right? So after you exit your company, you do have the opportunity to take a deep breath, to think about, of course, what you want to do next. We had a lockdown period, so we were operating within the new company for a few years, right? And as we were doing that, we also transitioned and built a family office. Right behind me, you can see the sign. It's called NPX Capital. So this is a venture capital, it's a private equity, it's a multi-asset family office that we're currently operating out of South Korea. I'm here also in Hong Kong, and we're opening an office in Los Angeles in the spring. So when I say take a moment to pause, for me, what's important, right? So matters what matter, you know, what matters to you is what's most important. For me, it's always been about family. My brother and I actually helped retire our parents. So they were based in Atlanta, Georgia at the time. We flew them out to Korea for them to relocate and come back home, if you will, because we immigrated to the States in 1990. And for the first time in their lives, they had the opportunity to come back home to be closer to us. And then we did some traveling, right? So we did a family vacation, spent some time just sharing. You know, for our parents, they also really didn't know what we were up to. They just knew we were doing something related to education and building some type of online platform in China. And they only had the opportunity to visit once. So for them, it was also incredibly eye-opening to see what their sons had done. And of course, we attribute a lot of our success and the type of individuals we are from great parents that we have.
I can't even imagine from their perspective to not only see the two of you, their two sons working together, but then to see that success and to experience that success that leads to a change in their life and this trip together. And I think it's awesome that you did take that time to celebrate and just look back on how far you had come and come together as a family.
Thank you. Yeah, absolutely. I think it's important to thank the giants in your life, always to have a grateful heart, to give back to the individuals who've done so much for you, and then also to take pause to reflect and think about what's next, right? So you need to constantly be thinking about what's next and how you can continue to add value, to have impact, and to grow and build something else that you're passionate about, that you're really interested in doing.
And you have a couple things in your title that we read in your bio. So one of them is obviously the work that you continue to do at NPX Capital. The other one that I'd love to talk about as well is your founder and CEO of Point Avenue. And I'm curious, first of all, to give listeners a sense of what is Point Avenue. But I guess that I don't want to tee up too much here, but it's kind of like, what is Point Avenue? I'd love to hear the origin story, but I'm also really curious how you juggle Point Avenue and NPX Capital and how you make that work.
Sure. So after we exited our company in China, we decided to relocate to South Korea. So this is home. What's interesting is I'll rewind a little bit. When we immigrated to the States, to Atlanta, Georgia in 1990, I was 5 years old at the time. My brother was six. And for the listeners out there, I just want to share with you that it's important to have goals, right? So even at a young age, at the age of 5 and 6, my brother would constantly talk about the goals. And when I say it's important to have goals, it's also important to either write it down or constantly be communicating the goals and how you plan to move forward. So we had three goals for ourselves when we were kids. Number one was, let's make it out of Georgia. Nothing wrong with Georgia, but we wanted to do more and venture out. Number two is let's build our own success. So whatever success means to you, right? And it's not just a financial reward, but I think it's also important to be able to wake up every day and to see work, not as work, but to be very passionate about what you do and to see the impact that you're having. And then the third thing we said is let's retire our parents. And so we were able to eventually accomplish those three things. And it took us until 2014, I guess, right? But we're able to do that. And so, you know, having those goals, and the goals also should evolve, right? So you should set new goals. You accomplish the goals, you set new goals, and you move forward. For me, after 2014, it was a matter of also on the personal side, I wanted to get married, right? I think starting a family has always been an important part. I was incredibly blessed to meet, you know, my wife in Shanghai, China, of all places. She was living in Thailand at the time. So my wife is Thai, I'm Korean American. And we met in Shanghai, China. We began our journey together as a couple, and we got married in 2017. So we're celebrating our anniversary this November. I'm taking her skiing in Japan. She loves skiing because she's better than me at skiing. So anything that she's better than me at, she just loves doing. She's super competitive as well. But yeah, you know, just for the listeners, I wanted to share more about the personal side as well, because it's a combination of succeeding and accomplishing things that you want, both professionally and also personally. And those things matter, right? So it's important to have balance in your life, and you have to constantly fight for that balance. It's not something you can just say and you accomplish. It's something you have to really want and then make efforts to do. So how do I balance?
I was going to say, I love that too. When I was at business school, I would see these incredible examples of just titans of industry who would speak, and still I'm in awe of what they accomplished. And over time, I you know, started to look and see that oftentimes what it took to achieve that came at the expense of multiple marriages and strained relationships with kids, and not even to put judgment on that, but for me, realizing like, oh, that's not what I want. And so one thing I appreciate about what you're saying, Danny, is not just the goals, but the explicit values that you want for your life, and how you have to consciously fight for those relationships and that family life that you want for yourself and your family, and making sure that it's not sacrificed at the, you know, to just to make a great company. So I think it's even more impressive to see what you've accomplished, bearing in mind that you do want to have simultaneously some sort of balance in your life. And I imagine that's not easy to obtain.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I think you and I definitely see eye to eye on that. And once again, it just boils down to values. What matters to you, right? I think for certain people, they have different sets of priorities, and you just have to really dig deep and figure out what you want ultimately in your life. When all said and done, right, at the end of your journey, right, at the end of our journey here on earth, what kind of legacy do you want to leave behind, and what matters to you most? So constantly challenge yourself to think about that, and then make an effort. You have to be intentional about what you do. So going back to your question, right? What do I do now? And then how do I kind of balance it all? Let's see. I am currently the founder and CEO of Point Avenue. So Point Avenue is in keeping with my background, West Point. And then of course, Massachusetts Avenue. So that's the road where MIT Harvard lies. So our company is called Point Avenue. It is an education technology company committed to teaching character. So instilling character in K-12 students. We actually have students as young as 2 years old, but we have students as old as in 12th grade. and we are based in Hanoi, Vietnam, rapidly expanding to other Southeast Asian countries. And so we are an offline center, and we also have an online component, AI test preparation, AI counseling, and online tutoring that we are in the process of building out. So you can think of it as a version 2.0, right? But more accelerated and much bigger platform, of course, with previous track record and an incredible team. So my co-founders are also other West Point graduates, military vets. I'll tell you about them shortly. But what's kind of fueling and funding what we're doing is the family office. So we have MPX Capital as the investment arm as we continue to scale and build the company. And so, you know, I do many things, right? Including finding time to spend with my family. And of course, every Monday is what we call wife day, to spend time with wife in the afternoon, because I work almost every day. I think it's just trying to balance it all. And once again, I keep saying this, but you have to be intentional about the things that you want, right? Things that matter. So that's what I'm up to. I'm currently in Hanoi, Vietnam.
How did you choose Hanoi?
Oh yeah. So Hanoi is an incredible place to be. It's very, you know, accelerated growth. GDP is about 7% year on year. You know, there's a population of about 100 million people. Within that population, about a third, so about 30, 34 million is within what we call the K-12 market, right? So very young population. The average age is in the low 30s. Vietnamese families are looking to have many kids. So you have households, unlike China with the one-child policy, when I was there at the time, you have households of 2, 3, 4 children within one. And I think there's also a great emphasis among Vietnamese families to receive an international education. So whether it be teaching English and the international values at a young age by sending their kids to international schools, or of course, ultimately sending their children abroad to study in boarding high schools or in universities, undergraduate and graduate schools. So for us, we saw the opportunity to really help shape and impact the future generation of a growing nation such as Vietnam. And there's also great bilateral relationships between the U.S. And Vietnam, right? So historically, of course, you know, in 73, we left, right, the war, Vietnam War. And then in 75, the country was unified. And then in 1994, the trade relations opened up again, thanks to the efforts of course, John Kerry, the late Senator John McCain, and also Bill Clinton. So, you know, we've been trading with Vietnam for the past nearly 25 plus years, and the bilateral relationships are the best it's ever been. And, you know, that's a direct quote from the U.S. ambassador out here. I had the opportunity to have breakfast with him last week, and just hearing from him about how he's very optimistic about the future of the two nations gives us great confidence to be able to operate. Vietnam welcomes foreign direct investment. You know, they welcome foreign companies to come and to help contribute to their economic growth. These families are incredibly accommodating and welcoming of foreign entities like us, individuals who are incredibly passionate about empowering the future generation through our character-based approach in teaching. So it's been a very nice transition, actually, right? Moving from China to Korea to Vietnam now, it's been a nice transition. I mentioned this, my wife is Thai, so Thailand is only an hour and a half away. We're expanding our operations to Bangkok so we can also spend some time at home with her family and with our family occasionally too.
How does it feel? Because now, I'm betting that some of the playbook that worked previously, you're now applying to your new company. It's great for listeners to know that Danny worked hard to build up a tremendous amount of career capital in an industry, and now he's able to leverage much of that, I'm guessing, for this new venture. But I'm also noticing the differences. You're now in the CEO spot. You're now in a different location, and it's a completely different team, I'm guessing. So I'm wondering what it's like going through a similar process, but with this knowledge and with all of these changes in this completely new environment.
So I think experience is your best friend, right? When you're building a company for the first time, there are just so many things that you just don't know. And many setbacks you have, you learn a lot from those setbacks. But ultimately, you keep driving forward. I generally stay very optimistic. You know, our time here on Earth is quite short, right? If you kind of add up the numbers there. So I just wake up every morning and I'm intentional about just being positive, right? So I want to bring positivity into the workplace, bring in positivity, you know, among colleagues and team members. It's very important to have that kind of mindset. I think how it's quite different is once you have a track record, right? So once you have successfully exited a company or a few companies, then one, you have a lot of confidence, right? You believe that you can do something that you've never done before. And the second and the third and the fourth time, it becomes easier, it becomes familiar, and other people are willing to be a part of that success, right? So I think the first company that I was a part of, I also had the opportunity to be in a, you know, not in the CEO role, right? So that was my brother, just learning from him, from his leadership, from his vision, from the way in which he operated. It was an incredible journey for me to just be able to listen and observe and then be a part of it. And then it was my turn, right? So when we were launching this next company, he said, "You're ready, right? So this is an opportunity I'm presenting to you, and do you want to take it?" And I said, "Absolutely, right? I've been waiting for this moment." So, you know, instead of building this company with individuals who are maybe proven in this industry with an education technology and individuals who have been in Asia operating this type of business, I made the very, you know, for me, it was an easy decision to bring and recruit what I call my band of brothers, right? So the individuals that I served with overseas in Iraq, in Afghanistan, individuals I went to college with at West Point, you know, brothers I've known for the past 12 to 15 years. And, you know, these guys actually took a very different path, right? So they served in the military. One guy was a Marine Corps officer. Then he served within the government, still did government work, right? Out of Los Angeles for one of those three-letter agencies. And then, you know, he joined us right into education and entrepreneurship. So imagine that transition, right? And then for the other co-founders, these guys went on to MBA programs. So they went on to some incredible MBA programs, Wharton, Berkeley, Haas, and Kellogg. And then they went into investment banking, into management consulting, into working at a company, Apple, right? I'm sure you heard of that. And just learning, I think, from corporate, learning from best practices, learning from big organizations in which how they operate, how they train, how they manage, and bringing all those experiences here, right? So for all of those guys, when I made the phone call, I said, "Hey, there's a great opportunity. Are you interested in joining?" And when I made those phone calls while I was in China, they all said no, right? So they turned me down multiple times. You know, I don't give up easily, so I'm incredibly persistent in everything, right? Thankfully, I didn't have to ask my wife more than once to marry me. She said yes the first time, right? But yeah, so when I was in China, right, we're still building the company. We didn't have a track record. We just didn't have that experience. And so for them, it was much more of a risk, right? And also, I think timing is important. So for them, timing professionally, they were looking to finish that two-year MBA to get their feet wet in terms of having the corporate experience at these big companies. And it just wasn't good timing. And I think when I made the phone call back in October of 2017, so I got married a month after that, right? So a month prior to, I said, "Hey, are you guys interested in coming out for the wedding? You know, we're going to celebrate in Thailand. Oh, by the way, are you interested in moving out to Vietnam?" So I kind of threw that in there, right? and interestingly enough, they all said, number one, you have our attention, right? So you finally have our attention. We're interested. And then number two is you got to make me a promise. If I come out there, you got to build me a gym.
Yeah.
Right. So that was their requirement. And I said, "All right, let's make it happen." So a month after, we all met up in Thailand at the wedding. We talked through the business plan, talked through what we were going to build together. And ultimately, you know, they made the leap of faith because of the brotherhood, right? Because of the camaraderie, because of, you know, just the trust in each other and our ability to be able to figure things out, problem solve, and to build. And so we're here. And I, you know, I'm so incredibly proud of the team, right? This is the best company that I've been a part of. And it's not because I'm in the CEO role. We actually have a very flat organization, right? So with my co-founders, with my best friends, we're not just building a company, we're doing it while staying friends and leaning on each other for emotional support, for encouragement, to be able to finish this journey together. What's interesting is at the very beginning of the company aspect, we said, how will we measure our success as an organization? And collectively, we all agreed before we stood up and left that room, we said, we'll measure success by finishing the journey with those we started.
Was this a dream or a thought when you were at West Point? Like, I love this image of your brother and you when you were so young setting these three goals. And I'm just curious, was there a point at your life where there was a goal of like, I want to work with these people once we're out of the military, or I want to start a company with these friends of mine?
So when I was in the military, I did not have those goals because my goal was to make a career out of the Army, right? So I wanted to do 30, 40 years and just continue to give back and serve. It wasn't really presented to me until my brother said, hey, come to China. And at this moment, I thought to myself, I said, okay, first and foremost, I'm not going to be able to drag and bring anybody with me to China, right? Can't really convince my other friends to leave the Army and join me in a new venture in a new country where we didn't really know the language or the people. So I made a promise to myself actually in that moment, in that transition period. So before I got out to China, before I left the Army, and I said, I will go to China and build a great company with my brother. So I'm not just going out there to try something out. I'm all or nothing, right? So that's the first thing. The second thing is once we build a successful company and we have a great platform, my goal was to then bring my band of brothers, right? So bring my friends. And when I say brothers, you know, I don't mean just the males, right? So males and females, we have a combination of both incredible brothers and sisters. And so that was a commitment I made even before I transitioned out of the military to say, I would love to build companies with the people I trust the most, with the people I served with, to also give them the same type of opportunities and even better opportunities than I had when I transitioned out. And so I made a silent commitment to myself. I left, kind of dropped off, you know, all the social media because in China, everything's blocked. So I disappeared, you know, off the radar, just kept my head down and just worked. I kept my head down and just worked for a few years. And then after we exited our company, I shared with you, I had the opportunity to take a deep breath, to reflect, to gather my thoughts about what's next. And that's when I reappeared again and started reaching out to my friends and said, hey, this is what we've done so far. There's a lot more to do, and I would love for you to be a part of it. Are you interested? And so I was able to actualize those goals, right? Once again, it goes back to the goal setting and to bring the people closest to me, the people I trust the most, to build something together, something incredibly valuable and meaningful and impactful.
That's great. It's really inspiring. It's very energizing to hear that story and the purity of the intention behind it. And also I love that you're underscoring the persistence and perseverance that goes on behind all of this. And I'm thinking of probably the times in my life where I maybe wouldn't even have the courage to ask the people I wanted to work with to join me. And then certainly wouldn't have persisted in asking them multiple times and facing that rejection. And it takes a lot of courage. One thing I wanted to ask about was, on the one hand, it seems like there is a tremendous amount of opportunity for those willing to work in Southeast Asia, in China, in that region of the world. And at the same time, I'm recognizing your background growing up in South Korea, the fact that your brother was in China. For someone who's listening, and maybe it's not entrepreneurship, maybe it's just taking advantage of an opportunity in that region of the world. Any Sure. advice for how to make that happen if they don't know anyone over there, if they have no context for what it's like living over there?
Yeah, so before I start with that, I just want to reiterate, don't be afraid of rejection. Right? Don't be afraid of failure. I think that's what prevents people from from transitioning successfully and being able to start kind of a new chapter and to do something that they've never done before. So I've had a lot of failures and setbacks in my life. Go back to my time at West Point. I think at the age of 17, I tried out for the crew team, the rowing team. I got rejected because I wasn't tall enough. I tried out for class president, and I thought I had it in the bag, and I ultimately ended up losing. And so I just had multiple setbacks. And then, of course, with every setback, you reflect, you learn, and then you get back up and you drive forward. And you have to be persistent, and you have to believe, you have to be optimistic that you can be better the next time. And so now, moving forward to where I am today, I think I just carry those lessons with me, and apply those every time. And of course, share those lessons with others. Right. So going back to your question, do you mind repeating?
Yeah. What advice you have for a listener who wants to work in some capacity in Asia, Southeast Asia, and doesn't even know where to start?
Absolutely. I think, one of the things is being in the military, you're constantly moving around, right? So a lot of times in the military, people would ask me, where's home? At one point, I guess it was in New York, then it was in Fort Benning, Georgia, then it was in Hawaii, and then, I would never call Iraq home, but constantly moving around, right? So I think we developed this mindset that home can be anywhere. It's not so much about the geographic location, but it's much more about the people you're with. So I think when you think about opportunities in a foreign country, in an area maybe where you're not so familiar, you have to really ask yourself, what type of community will I be surrounded by, right? So if you're surrounded by an incredible community of people that you want to be around, then work becomes fun, right? And work doesn't become work, but it's just a part of what you do. I think that's much more important than where you are geographically. That's the first part. Second part is, of course, it's important to have exposure and experience. So I think the worst thing anybody can do is live within a bubble, right? So you grow up in this town, you live in this town, you never really leave that bubble. There's just so much to learn, to experience, to know, to have exposure to. So I think really challenging yourself and pushing yourself out of a comfort zone, being in a country where you don't speak the language, you don't know the culture, where you are truly a foreigner, and assimilating, being with the people, appreciating others' cultures and values, instilling your values to them and sharing those. I think that's how we grow as individuals, right? So I think for people who are looking for that type of challenge or who are even unsure about it, I really want to encourage individuals to do that, because our life is short, right? So there's only so much that we can do in this iteration that we have in this opportunity. So you have to seize these opportunities and venture out, because, in seizing one opportunity, right, we all know multiple opportunities, multiple doors open up. And could I have seen where I am today, back 8-10 years ago? Absolutely not, right? I never even thought about Vietnam. Never thought I'd marry an incredible woman from Thailand. Never thought that I'd, fulfill the goal of retiring my parents so earlier than I had anticipated. I was thinking more about in my 40s or 50s. And of course, never thought that I'd work with my brother at such an early age and really continue to drive forward and build together. So yeah, these opportunities would never have been presented and come to fruition had I not said yes and took that leap of faith into the unknown.
That's awesome. Well, I know we've only got a couple minutes left here. I always like to leave the last chunk of time more open-ended. And I think there's a tremendous amount of ground you covered. And I think that even listeners not interested in entrepreneurship will be inspired by different pieces of your story. But I wanted to make space before we wrap up. You can take it one of two ways or both. One is, what have we not covered that you really want to make sure listeners know? Or the other one is just, what are some parting words of wisdom that you would give to listeners today?
Sure. So I think it's always important to remember where you come from, right? So I come from very humble beginnings. My parents, and they were small business owners based in Atlanta, Georgia. And, you know, for an immigrant family, we had big dreams, right? So we moved to America, typical immigrant story, for better opportunity, educational opportunity, life opportunity for myself and my brother. So I think always staying grounded and remembering where you come from is important, right? I still have a very healthy relationship with my parents. They're based in Korea. So every time I come here, of course, I see them. I take them out for a meal, just catch up with them on how they're doing. I call them on a daily basis, taught them how to use a smartphone when I got them these, you know, smartphones. And it was a very patient lesson for me to go through to teach them. But just remembering where you come from is important, no matter how much success you build, right, or where you go in the future. That's the first part of it. And then the second part of it is give back, right? So in the military, of course, it's a natural thing because we're committing our lives, right? It's dedicated service, selfless service to our nation that we love so much, and giving back in terms of leadership and taking care of our soldiers. But sometimes, you know, people think when they transition out, right, maybe, you know, we need to shift our gears or think in a different way when we think about business or private sector. But it's actually even more so incumbent upon us to give back to the veterans, right? So such as what you guys are doing. I mean, I think beyond the uniform, you guys are doing some incredible things. And that's why I decided to be a part of this, just to share my story. To also continue to allow you guys to fulfill your mission of just capturing stories and sharing that with other vets to inspire them. So I appreciate what you're doing, Justin, and your team.
Thank you, Danny. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I think how I'm doing that now is I've recently connected with West Point, right? So my alma mater. I've always been incredibly passionate about giving back to West Point because you know, it has given me so much. We recently invited the superintendent, the former superintendent, General Kazan, out here to Vietnam. So it was his first trip out to Vietnam. He's currently the president of the University of South Carolina. So we had about a week with the soup daddy out here, right? We had some bun chow, we had some pho, and we talked about, you know, when he was my division commander and just his incredible journey of selfless service of 42 plus years. And he even shared with us that he's incredibly proud of us for being able to make the transition so boldly, so, you know, courageously to transition out of the military to do so. But then also how we were able to recruit a bunch of other West Pointers, bring a bunch of other military vets out here to build and to add value together. So he was proud of that camaraderie and sticking to the band of brothers. So I'm currently working with the BSNL department. So that's the Department of Behavioral Sciences and Leadership, working with the Entrepreneurship Club at West Point. And it's more of a long-term goal, but to really help build up the entrepreneurship opportunities, the programs, eventually in the future, a physical space, a center, and to give back to West Point in that way. And so I'll be going there this December, from the 8th to the 15th of December, and sharing a message with various cadets and the different clubs and programs there, along with communicating with the Association of Graduates, AOG, to really identify ways in which I can continue to give, but also the individuals, right, my co-founders out here, how we can continue to give and inspire others to find time to give of their time, of their message, of, you know, if possible, even financially, to give to the organizations that you're a part of, specifically within the military, any way, shape, or form, because it's incredibly important to give back to something that has given us so much.
Well, Danny, I appreciate your taking the time early out of your day to share your story. I appreciate the way that you're supporting the military community as well, not just with Beyond the Uniform, but with West Point and hiring your classmates and partnering with them and just all the incredible work that you do. And I know that listeners are going to take a lot away from our conversation today. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Yeah, maybe like one last thing I would say is be disciplined about what you do, right? So I did wake up, you know, 5:30. I actually woke up at 5, I guess, had to splash some water in my face. But that's a normal day for me, right? So, you know, ever since I was 17, I guess, and maybe a little bit before that, I would always wake up early, start my day, meditating, reflecting, and then start my day with physical exercise. You know, in the military, we call it PT, right? PT is good for me, good for you. And then go into the office. So even now at my age, after all these years outside of the military, I still keep that bit of military discipline, keep that type of, you know, mindset in terms of healthy habits and how I operate my life personally and how that transitions into the professional workplace. But remember, like, this never stops, right? So the conscious effort you make to be healthy, to be balanced, to be physically fit, mentally strong, is something that has to carry with you even beyond the uniform, right? Pun intended.
I love it. I think of Jocko Willink, discipline equals freedom. That's really, really fantastic. Thank you so much, Danny.
Thank you very much. Surface.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Quick couple admin points. We release brand new episodes every single Monday and Thursday. Those are usually recorded about a month or so before they go live. Every Monday and Thursday, we have an interview, usually almost always with a military veteran about their civilian career. More and more, we're starting to add in experts who may not be veterans, but may have some expertise that will help the military veteran community. Saturdays, I typically post more of a behind the scenes episode, which is a free form format. I try to use what I'm calling a mullet format. And by that, I mean business up front, party in the back, talking through admin points, professional topics related to the podcast. It might be a conversation I had that week. It might have been an interview I had that week, but just trying to share things that are top of mind that may help you in more of a free form, straight from the heart format. And then the party in the back is the personal side of things, just kind of more free flowing thoughts on life, on improving oneself, just kind of whatever's going on in life and trying to be authentic and honest about those things as well. Special thanks. We have an all volunteer army of people behind Beyond the Uniform making this possible. We do this on our lunch breaks, on our evenings, on our weekends, because we love the military community. We want to give back. We want to make a difference. We want that as part of the purpose in our life that we valued in the military. So special thanks to Steve Bain. Steve does pretty much everything. He helps secure guests. He does our newsletter. He keeps the reels rolling and keeps me sane. Kathleen Dillon, the first person to join our team. She writes text transcripts of every single episode. It's wild. She keeps up with two of these a week, despite a demanding career and education right now. But those transcripts help us get more SEO value, helps her audience more. Andrew Woolridge is our data guru. He helps us understand the numbers, which is the easiest way for us to figure out how we can better support you, and adds kind of the data oversight for that. Rick Healy does all of our social media. He is gaining more and more of an audience for us by getting our videos, getting our podcasts out on social channels. The best way to stay in contact with us is if you go to beyondtheuniform.org, there is a newsletter. You'll have a little pop-up that comes up. You can put your email in. We email twice per month. We try to be respectful, but it is a great way to get appraised of upcoming events, upcoming interviews, promos where companies are giving discounts to Beyond the Uniform listeners, and more. This does cost money to put on. We are committed to not charging veterans directly. And the way that we kind of offset costs is through corporate sponsors. So if you know of a company that would like to get in front of a military audience and their families, that's one way that we can both add value to our members, but also offset the costs of Beyond the Uniform and give us a little bit of budget to start expanding what we're doing. So that's the best way you can help us. If that's not something that you can do, a positive review on iTunes is greatly appreciated. Have a wonderful week. We will be back Monday, Thursday, and Saturday with more interviews. And keep up the listening. Take care.